Byron Radio.
Excellent. And the weather today, highs of 20 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade. It'll be a rather cloudy day with some outbreaks of rain.
The new Siren Radio.
It's coming. It is actually here. The ultimate gaming celebration is finally coming to the capital at Printworks in London this weekend between the 11th and 12th of August. And to talk a little bit about this and also this fondness we have for retro gaming, we have two fabulous folk. We have, first of all, the Managing Director of Replay Events. That would be the awesome Andy Brown. How are you, Andy?
I'm very good. Thank you very much.
And we also have YouTuber, gaming expert, general all-round comedian. It's the awesome Ashens himself. Stuart Ashen, how are you, Stuart?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Stuart, if we can come to you first with respect to this research that has just been released, which tells us a little bit about our gaming nostalgia. Super Mario Brothers, Pac-Man, Sonic the Hedgehog, they never go away, do they? I mean, it's almost the old video games don't die, they just become pixelated.
Absolutely. It's astonishing how these games, I mean, going back to the early 90s there for the latest of those three, but they're still very, very iconic. I think there's something about a classic design along those lines that really sticks in people's heads.
See, I still have a fondness for the traditional two-bat tennis scenario where you'd have the beep, beep.
Oh, for you. The pong machine.
Exactly.
Absolutely, yes.
I mean, to me, that was the ultimate in Zen and the art of gaming, surely. It's focused in all sorts of ways. Andy, were you surprised by this, or have you always been a secret Super Mario fan?
If I had to pick the three most popular, I would have picked those. They're definitely, as Stuart said, the most iconic gaming characters.
Yeah, I suppose Pac-Man obviously doing his constant consumerism from that point of view. So why is this, Stuart? I mean, is it just a case of, you know, it's like anything on nostalgia in the 80s? I mean, have you not watched Stranger Things? I mean, we just love the 80s. We're crazy for the 80s. Or is it kind of more deep-rooted than that? Did this somehow kind of capture a sort of moment in time which people are trying desperately to recreate?
Yeah, it's certainly a moment in time there. I think that there's a very sort of basic, really positive facets to the gameplay of these early games, where it's, you can pick it up, you can play it, somebody can understand it very quickly, but they're also very good fun to come back to.
Manchester obviously held the first Play Expo. We actually sort of had 20,000 attendees coming up to that sort of things. You've shifted to London. Was that a deliberate sort of statement to actually say, yeah, we're going to go to the capital for this? What the hey? We're going to civilise the Southerners.
It's not a shift. We're still doing our Manchester show. It's in addition to our portfolio. We looked to do something in London for some time, and a lot of things all met up. Timing was right, we found a great venue, and here we are, a few days away from the launch.
Exactly, Printworks Surrey Quays Road, to be precise, the 11th and 12th of August. Are tickets still available?
They are, they're selling fast, like hotcakes.
Yeah, that's surprising. Now, Stuart, as we said, we introduced you as YouTuber, gaming expert, comedian, and so on. Where do you see the industry going in the next, let's say, 5 years? Is it a case of we'll have 3D, we'll have virtual immersion, we'll have Oculus Rift, we'll actually sort of be having our best friends being Sonic and the Mario Brothers?
My goodness, there's an image. I think, yeah, virtual reality is now becoming more affordable and much easier to set up. I think the weakness with virtual reality at the moment is they haven't quite found the killer app or the way to really get people engaged with games on it. So I think within the next 5 years, somebody will work that out. So with the technology becoming more accessible and the games becoming more fun, I think that may be the next big thing.
Do you think Call of Duty, etc., will have a similar place in the nation's fond look back over things, or Halo, or areas like that where we actually say, oh, I remember when shoot-em-ups were really good fun and various other things? Or is that a case of, no, actually, we kind of tend to fall out of love with the more violent computer games?
I think it's strong characters that keep things going, hence the Mario, Pac-Man, Sonic the Hedgehog, etc. Whereas with those games, you don't have that sort of strong mascot to keep people interested in the same way. Something like Halo 2, people will perhaps remember, as it was one of the first online shooters, and that's a new experience for them, but you have to bring something very new to the table to be remembered fondly many years down the road in gaming.
Survey suggested that 67% of those asked agreed that gaming represents a chance to bond with the younger members of the family. Can they do that over Pokemon, Crash Bandicoot and Tomb Raider, do you think, Andy?
Oh, definitely. If you come down to our shows, you see whole families coming down, dads with their kids and the mums as well. And it's definitely a positive bonding experience, as the research said. Dads are showing the kids how they used to play games, thinking they're really good at them, and then the kids kind of totally school them and show them how you really do play games these days. So, yeah, it's really good fun.
And Stuart, any particular favourites from your own point of view which maybe didn't make the list in the end, or was it a case of, no, as long as Lara Croft Tomb Raider was in there, I didn't care?
I get most excited about the physical arcade machines, because obviously there's something you just don't see anymore.
Used to be Space able to Invaders.
To the seaside in the 1980s, and there would be a whole plethora of these machines, but the Expo's got, I think, over 100 of them. The big hydraulic cabinets you can sit in and things move about. It's just the best way to play the old arcade games.
And Tetris obviously still emerges from that point of view as well. And Andy, what about yourself? Is it a case of, no, I have to actually be completely objective as the managing director of replay events, I can't possibly show any favourites whatsoever, or is there a sneaking line from yourself that you say, actually, that's the one I most like?
Oh, I'm definitely with Stuart. I grew up in Blackpool, so seaside arcades were pretty much where I spent most of my childhood, so sitting in playing Outrun, I think, is me in Nirvana.
Well, there you go. PlayExpoLondon.com, presumably the best website to go to find out all manner of wonderful things, including the event this weekend, the 11th and 12th of August, Printworks, Surrey Quays Road, London.
Yep.
Good.
PlayExpoLondon.com.
Just wanted to confirm that. That's fine. And finally, something which nobody's actually done a game about, which I call it our kind of our audience satisfaction survey. Have you both gentlemen had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning? Has it been okay, Andy and Stuart?
Wonderful.
Absolutely, yeah.
This is positive.
Silver in my tambourine. Help a poor man build a pretty dream. Give me pennies, I'll take anything. Now listen while I play, 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 play. My green tambourine. Watch the jingle jangle start to shine. Reflections of the music that is mine. Green tambourine. Drop a dime before I walk away. Any song you want, I'll gladly play. Money feeds my music machine. Now listen while I play my green tambourine.
Your green tambourine, the Lemon Pipers. We were talking in the first part of the programme about the catering for dietary needs that's costing Britain an extra £206 million each week, and some of the challenges that are put together with one quarter of all households has someone suffering from either an allergy or a food intolerance, the largest of these, of course, being dairy. Now, to talk about this research that's been developed by Bosch, who better than an all-round wonderful soul, multi-talented writer, editor, presenter extraordinaire? It's Rebecca Seale. How are you, Rebecca?
I'm very good, thank you for that.
Let's move straight into this whole notion about the challenges that we're facing. Because, I mean, people spending 2.5 hours in the kitchen making food that meets everyone's needs, that's quite a challenge, really.
Yeah, it is a massive challenge. And I was really fascinated when I received the research results that Bosch had put together, because it just really blew my mind how much extra money and time people were spending.
There used to be a time where people tended to sort of almost be looked at askance if they admitted to being a vegetarian. If you were a vegan, oh, Lord, if you start talking about fruitarians and so on. Is this a mixture of partly dietary needs because of well-being? Is it a case of lifestyle choice? Is it a case of becoming more sensitive to the planet? Or is it a case of, well, you know, we were omnivores, we need to get with the whole sort of package, and that's how evolution's developing with human beings?
I think it's all of those things, really. I think that people have got an increased awareness that they should tread more lightly, or that we should all tread more lightly on the planet as much as possible. But it's also clear that food intolerances and food allergies are on the rise, and why that should be is quite difficult to understand or explain. I don't think anybody has come up with a complete answer to that question. The science is like in its infancy, so it's really difficult to know quite why, whether it's environmental or whether it's exposure to chemicals or what exactly has created this incredible rise. But to know that one in four households have got people living with them who've got allergies or intolerances is extraordinary. I actually have a dairy allergic and soy allergic daughter, so I'm very much living in this world as well. But it's been a complete learning curve for me.
certainly in terms of looking at the way in which you consume food. I mean, William Sitwell, one of our regular contributors, might be joining us later on in the programme today. Variety can be the spice of life, but I was intrigued to find that the one dish that can guarantee out of those that were polled, 90% of those said that the number one choice, which was a hit with 54% of families, was indeed the Sunday roast. So is that safe, or is that okay? Or are we talking about roast chicken? Are we talking about roast beef? Is there a whole, or just a Sunday roast, or just Yorkshire pudding?
Well, that's the lovely thing about the roast, isn't it? That you can kind of you can make it something that works for everybody. So you can have meat as a part of it if you want to. But certainly, I was vegetarian for a very long time, and I was quite happy just having all of the delicious trimmings. So I didn't need to have the meat at all. And I think that's a great thing about where we find ourselves now, is that people are much more prepared to be flexible and open-minded and a little bit more creative when they're in the kitchen, and try and come up with new ways of approaching old dishes that they're very familiar with. For example, one of the things that I often suggest to people to do if they're dealing with allergies or they've got vegetarians or vegans in the house is to use dishes which they're very familiar with, like spaghetti bolognese, which is another super popular dish. 52% of families in the research still love spaghetti bolognese. Is to make the base of it, or the vegetable side of it, in one pan, and then divide it into two and have make a meat version, say, and a vegetarian or vegan version in another pan, so that everybody's still coming together and eating the same thing, but you're making it work for everybody's different needs.
See, this is the way in which you can point out the apparently obvious, but you've done it with such style and panache. Let's talk a bit more about Bosch. Let's talk about the Bosch products and what makes them particularly useful for households who actually do have different dietary requirements.
Yeah, so the reason Bosch did this research was that they have created a couple of built-in ovens which have a special way that you can cook food in one oven without all the flavours mixing together. So I, for example, used to have a vegetarian boyfriend who was absolutely outraged if he'd ever eat anything that tasted fishy, even if it was vegetarian. And that can happen if you cook things together. So he'd been delighted with this invention. So that's why they came up with doing the research, because they wanted to know how prevalent these issues were across the UK.
Now, with respect to how things are actually going, let's point people in the direction of more information. I mean, inevitably, I would say you should surely actually check out rebeccaseal.co.uk, if only to actually look at the three shots of your good self consuming sort of street food thing. It's fantastic.
Yes, genius. The burrito.
Yes, exactly. You know, that's in action perfect from that point of view. But are people more interested in finding out a bit more about Bosch and what we've been talking about today, where would you suggest they should be going?
So if they go to the Bosch website, bosch-home.co.uk, they can find out much more about the research and the product.
And in terms of sort of general advice for people who are a bit worried about eating habits and choices that they might not have encountered before, I mean, as a nation, we tend to be, almost have this conservatism in terms of, I mean, maybe we're getting rid of it, but certainly a few decades ago, the notion of actually going beyond our kind of comfort zone was deemed, oh, we're not having any of that foreign rubbish, we're going to go for this sort of thing. What advice would you provide there?
Well, I think people are getting a lot more open-minded about what they eat. And I think one of the things that an increase in veganism and vegetarianism pushes us towards is looking at food from outside the UK. So in my household, because of the dairy allergy, we eat a huge amount of coconut-based dishes, because obviously I want my kids to get healthy fats in their diet, and I can't do that through cheese and milk. So we do loads of curries and stir fries and things like that, which also include loads of vegetables. So I think it's definitely worth looking beyond your traditional dishes. But the other thing is to just explore. There are loads of brilliant food blogs, fantastic recipe books, which allow you to look at different ways of cooking the things that you are familiar with. So cakes and biscuits and brownies and all sorts of things like that, so that you can have the things that you really love, and the people in your family who aren't able to eat the traditional versions can still have a really good time and feel like they're part of the gang.
Well, with the delights of Leon, happy one-pot cooking, and indeed Lisbon, recipes from the heart of Portugal upstanding. I mean, that clearly there's go-to stuff, etc. Shameless plug. I don't care. What the heck? It's well worth sorting out. Rebecca, two final questions for your good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you?
It's been absolutely lovely. Thank you.
Splendid. So can we look forward to, in the not-too-distant future, it's just the eating of the burrito. Fantastic. Can we connect with your good self in the near future? Will you be kind enough to return?
Absolutely. I'd love to. Thank you so much.
Summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirt and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match, yeah. But at night, it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night. Despite the heat, it'll be all right. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city. Cool town, meeting in the city, dressed so fine and looking so pretty. Cool cat, looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city. Till I'm wheezing like a bus stop, running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop. But at night it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night. Just like the heat, it'll be all right. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city.
Estate agent says that clearly they're not necessarily the best loved of individuals. And when it comes round to various fees that are actually charged, a recent survey from House Simple has shown that 82% of those surveyed have agreed that the first fee that was given to them by their estate agent, which is obviously, he tends to say, well, caveat emptor. Now, to address this, who better than the awesomely talented broadcaster extraordinaire? She's one of the key souls of Rip Off Britain and a whole factor of other ranges of things. It's the awesome Gloria Hunniford. How are you, Gloria?
You know how to get through to a girl's heart, don't you?
It's the only right and proper way, Gloria. That's the bottom line. But this particular survey, it does seem as though we need to think. I mean, maybe we were sort of pressurised into it, but as I say, if you agree the first price, it's not really going to be necessarily the best one.
Well, what's a bit shocking is the fact that when you read it in all the stats, is the fact that 82% of us agree the first fee that we're given. And I think maybe in the past this has been a very traditional thing. You know, you have your traditional estate agent in the high street. And I think it's also quite pressurizing and intimidating when you're selling your house anyway, because you want to have the best deal. And I think, you know, you've got so many facts and figures going on and photographs being taken and how much do you think I'll get for my house and so on, that I think we just sort of, like, without thinking about it too much, give in. But life has changed, and I think that, you know, online stuff has really taken over. The computer has really changed our lives. And because within my family at the moment, we have one that's selling and a few that are buying, so I'm conscious of this at the moment. And so when I saw the report that House Simple had brought out, I was drawn to it, because obviously through my job, we try to save people as much money as we can. And when you look online and you realize that, first of all, by the way, the report says that you should never pay any more than 1%, so get your negotiating talents out. But when you go online, you realize that one of the companies we came across, they will charge you £1,000 up front, so you've got to pay that. But that's whether you sell it or not. And yet we find another company who charges a flat fee of £995, but only when you sell. So I thought that was a terrific deal, and therefore, if you're in for saving money, well, deals like that aren't to be passed.
Is it a case of we're always a little bit suspicious, and we even though apparently we're looking for more greater transparency and so on, there's something in the British psyche which says, oh, it can't be, you know, let's just put up with it, let's just moan about the whole thing.
Yeah, well, I suppose psychologically people might think, well, I'll go to my estate agent around the corner in the high street. And I wondered sort of how this online aspect would work, but apparently they have all their local representatives anyway. So let's suppose you go online, and the local person will come out, check your house, you know, take the photographs, do all the sizings, etc., and then put the photographs online, the traditional way. But the attraction for me anyway, as I'm an individual trying to save money, is the fact that you don't have to pay these bigger fees.
Is it a case of being prepared, doing your research, sorting the things through? We haven't reached a stage where we can just hand it over to an artificial intelligence to actually sort it out for us. We need to actually do a bit of research and preparation.
Well, I do a lot. I do a lot of research now because, you know, Rip Off Britain has taught me that if I'm dealing with my house insurance, which I obviously was a few months back, but I manage by shopping around or getting my broker to shop around because by law I think they have to do that anyway. I managed to save £2,000 on that. And then when it came to, say, private insurance, which I personally quite liked, of medical insurance, at my stage in life, you know, but they do put it up every year. So I was looking for ways to reduce that rather large fee per year. And there are ways to do it. So I'm conscious of the fact that you have to try and negotiate it. And I think that's the message out of this report. You know, you can negotiate your fee. You can say, well, I'm told in good authority that I should not pay more than 1%. So that's what I'm doing. Otherwise, I'll go to my online person who'll only charge me £995 flat rate. Mm.
HowSimple.com, would that be the best place to actually go to find out further details?
Absolutely. So all the information and all the details of this very good report are in there.
Well, we knew it was going to be absolutely awesome because we've worked regularly with Angela Ripon, your co-host with respect
to
Rip Off Britain.
So
it's all connects there. Gloria, we've got two final customer satisfaction questions and that's all. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning? Has it been okay for you?
Have you been good, you mean?
No, well, have you been satisfied with the questions
totally
and a whole range of things?
I'm satisfied with you.
Well, that's splendid. Will
I give you a 10 out of 10?
Well, I mean, the smiley face, hashtag, whatever. I mean, would you be kind enough to return? That's the next question we put to you.
I thought Bo Derek was the only one who gave 10 out of 10.
Oh.
Anyway, you get it today from
And Gloria, that is one of the reasons why that lunchtime show on BBC Radio 2 was much better when you used to anchor it. But I shall say no more. There we are. Gloria Hunniford, we salute you. Take care now.
Thanks, Alex. Bye-bye.
Our lips shouldn't touch.
Move over, darling.
I like it too much.
Move over, darling.
That gleam in your eyes is no big surprise anymore. 'Cause you fooled me before. To give in.
Finest in gourmet criticism and foodie delights, and the author of A History of Food in 100 Recipes. Quite clearly a question of quality personified. It's William Sitwell on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Hurrah, hurrah, and hurrah again. Just as well, William, we managed to get a substitute for your good self briefly. Not that anybody could ever replace you, but it was Gloria Hunniford who stepped into your 9:20 slot, which was nice. So that's all good there. How are you, William? Where are you, William?
I'm on Great Portland Street, trying to get a mud guard for the front wheel of my bicycle.
Oh, right.
Today's groundbreaking story.
Well, I mean, clearly that's the thing that will be rolling out across the press and the press agencies across the whole globe. Earlier we were speaking to another food journalist, editor and TV presenter, Rebecca Seal. Have you encountered Rebecca in your travels at all?
I know Rebecca very well.
Oh.
Great writer. She's a great drinks expert. She appears on that Channel 4 show, Sunday Brunch.
She was also very commendable about your good self as well. So I feel, I mean, you're sharing the airwaves here after a fashion. Rebecca's off doing various other things. But she was talking about the notion that one in five households now have a vegetarian or a vegan in the house. And I've got to ask the question, is there a vegan in the house of Sitwell?
Most certainly not.
I didn't think there would be. But it was just I thought that the question had to be put from that point of view.
I don't believe this statistic, by the way. I think it's skewed against the millennials in the south of England. I don't suppose there's one in five veggies in the Lincolnshire households.
Well, it's an interesting thing. I mean, this also goes along for other research which suggests one quarter of all households have someone suffering from either an allergy or a food intolerance, and parents actually spend 2.5 hours in the kitchen every week making food which meets everyone's needs. Seems a lot more complicated than it used to be.
Yeah, well, I often find these polls slightly dubious. I think that there's a very mixed picture, depending on your socio-demographic and place, the part of the world that you live in. The bottom line is not enough people cook often enough, and not enough people understand good household economics. And they buy cheap food, which doesn't actually save them money, and ends up making them fat and killing them.
Harsh words, but fair words, and certainly things which need to be taken on board as ever. Interesting enough, the three top hits with more folk than ever, burgers and chips, spaghetti bolognese, and the old-fashioned Sunday roast.
Well, are you trying to tell me people are making burgers and chips at home? They're most certainly not. If they're making spaghetti bolognese, that's fantastic. If they're making, you know, that lovely beef ragu, they're cooking their pasta well, that's fantastic. What was the third one?
The other one, as indeed the caller actually comes through here, was indeed the old-fashioned Sunday roast.
Yeah, well, there's some encouraging things going on here, if that's true.
Well, you know.
But I mean, if you actually ask, I think you'll find that the statistics of the fact that the amount of sandwiches people eat at home would disturb you. And actually, a lot of the pasta that people make, I think you'll find they're not making it at all. They're using bought sauces, they're using pre-made pestos, so that, you know, you can't really call boiling up some penne or some spaghetti and adding in a spoon of pesto and then grating parmesan as cooking. But it's a start, I suppose.
People often used to talk about seasonal cooking, and there's that notion that we should go back to seasonal cooking and so on and so forth. I know it's something that's been close to your heart. Is that something which we're making progress with, William, or is it a case of no, we're as challenged as we ever were?
I think we are as challenged as we ever are and ever were. And I think that one of the problems is that we're a kind of divided society in terms of food. I think there's people who shop purely for price and sell-by date, and who see food as food as fuel. And then there's a sort of the middle-class foodies for whom food is a sort of hobby, and they try and cook seasonally and so on. But it's a divided picture, I think. And the other thing is, if you try and purely buy seasonally, it's very difficult because supermarkets are global enterprises these days, so they tempt you to buy goods that aren't in season. So if you get a nice, some nice looking asparagus in October, you know, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to self-censor yourself and not pick them up because they come from Brazil or Chile. I think it's hard. I think that if we had a serious food culture that was driven by markets, that was driven by the rural population, that was farming and sort of small holdings and so on, selling them at markets, then you'd have a different picture. But that's not how the world works. You know, if you travel to somewhere like the Dordogne in France, for example, and you go to a sort of largish regional town, like, I don't know, Bergerac or somewhere, you will see these phenomenal markets where you are deliberately constrained in what you have. And I actually think that constraint is a good thing. Economy is a good thing. Economy of choice is a good thing. the more choice you have, actually, the less brain power you exercise, and the less ingenuity you bring to your cooking. But unfortunately, you know, the human mind is too devilish and too intelligent, so we always try and make shortcuts. It's natural. You can't blame corporations for creating the Chorleywood bread process, speeding up the making of bread. It's how human behavior works. So, you know, it's a tough one, really. I just think that if people can understand that if you buy seasonally and locally, that you will produce economies and you'll probably end up cooking more healthily. But it's hard to tell a family who haven't got very much money not to buy a burger meal at McDonald's. It's very difficult.
William,
so the last thing we should do is preach at people.
William, I'm very impressed with the fact that you're keeping this wonderful, incisive, intelligent dialogue going, even when you've got the streets of London filled with various folk chuntering away in the background. It just shows the consummate professional that you are, which is fantastic. I'd certainly say williamsitwell.com, the go-to place. Although, admittedly, as I pointed out to Rebecca earlier in the programme, Rebecca does have a wonderful three images of her eating a burrito, which I think actually just... I mean, I think it's nip and tuck, really, in terms of williamsitwell.com, RebeccaSeal.com. I'll go with yourself, William, because of loyalty, obviously.
Well, I think we can coexist.
Oh, splendid. We'd like to hear that. Don't forget, Eggs or Anarchy, still available for download, purchase, and all range of things. The book with respect to the remarkable story of the man tasked with the impossible to feed a nation at war. You've got Soho Radio. We haven't produced that for a long time. We haven't produced it. We haven't mentioned the wonderful World Biting Talk. There's so many things there, including the slightly embarrassing admission for myself that last week, William, you asked for a particular tune, which I thought I noted down. I thought, oh, I'll play it back, etc. Could I find it? Is it the Milk Cart? Now, I'm going to actually make sure that this is on record. What was the band you were trying to actually sort of recommend last week? And you said, you must know it in Lincoln. It's a very popular beat combo. They know the whole thing.
The Milk. The Sonia's Wanderlust.
The Milk. Not the Milk Carton Kids, but the Milk and Sonia's Wanderlust. We will look that out for hopefully 168 hours from now. But we need to ask those two questions as ever. Have you had a recently interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
You've put it as concisely as I could.
And then I take it you will be able to join us again in about a week's time.
What the hell? Let's go crazy.
Whoa.
There's a certain sound always follows me around when you're close to me. You will hear it. It's the sound that lovers hear when they discover there could be no other for their love. It's my
You know, it's often said if you look after the pounds will look after themselves. When you bear in mind that new research by Uswitch has revealed that flexible contracts on mobile phones could be costing customers millions of pounds, it's time to actually say something must be done. Who better than to turn to mobiles expert extraordinaire with Uswitch, the fabulous Ernest Doku, to actually share with us some of the findings of this report. How are you, Ernest?
Very good, thanks.
Marvellous. Okay, so let's talk a bit about this research, because the figures seem to be quite astounding. I mean, even if you look on the basis of individually people paying roughly £69 to £70 extra a year, that's 38% more than they need. It seems that the phone companies, again, are fleecing us.
It's certainly astronomical numbers. As we found, one in six mobile customers are currently out of contract, so they've already paid off these handsets. They no longer ought to be charged for them, and they're overpaying by £27 million per month. It's a massive amount of money, and savings that could be made are huge. So a few years ago, a number of mobile providers, the likes of O2, Sky, Tesco and Virgin, introduced a new breed of tariff called the Flexi tariff. Very great step in the right direction. It effectively separated paying for the phone from paying for your airtime to avoid this massive overpayment. But having looked at it deeper, our research found that consumers are still spending £19 million a month more than they need to. As such, we're calling on all the providers to really issue end-of-contract notifications, similar to those you'd find when you reach the end of your insurance, mobile home insurance, and energy markets, so consumers know when to stop paying these highly inflated out-of-contract charges.
And clearly this is all down to inertia, that actually a lot of the service providers will almost rely on the fact that they'll just say, oh, people can't be bothered to actually change, they can't check the detail, just whatever, it's just 70 quid here, 70 quid there. It all mounts up, though.
It certainly does. We've got 3 million mobile customers out of contract on these deals. These tariffs being rolled out across the industry means consumers are paying over £200 million premium for this considered convenience. I think a lot of consumers do find that when your bills do get to the end of this 24-month period, you finish paying off your phone, it goes down by £10, £15 a month. That feels great. It feels like you're saving a lot of money. But when you're actually comparing these deals to SIM-only from the very same provider, as you've mentioned, you could save up to £70 on the airtime alone. So consumers are still paying significantly more than they need to, which is why this is the perfect time Ofcom, the telecoms regulators, looking into issuing end-of-contract notifications. As you've mentioned, the energy market, the insurance markets, it really stimulates consumers to move away from that inertia and do something about it when they find one of these notifications on their doorstep. You open it, it clearly states how much you paid last year, how much your bills are going to go up if you stay with the same provider next year, and then you're free to make that choice. So what we really want to see is these effective end-of-contract notifications allowing consumers to really step away from the precipice of big bills.
Is there a likelihood that there might be other sort of shifts made to charge more for, shall we say, standard pay-as-you-go customers, or is it to sort of shift people around? Because clearly profit margins are always there, and if you're robbing Peter to pay Paul, then sometimes you'll actually say, well, depending on what Ofcom actually come out with, and they're just starting their consultation period, we've always got this as a backup plan.
Sure, you're entirely right, and we're eager to keep a close eye on the shifting nature of the market. I think these tariffs are one reflection of the changing nature of consumers. Another one is this move to SIM-only tariffs. So you're not paying for a handset anymore, you're just switching to pay for that airtime. And we've seen a massive growth in the adoption of these. It's around 50% of the sales that we see at the moment are on those SIM-only tariffs. And so we're keeping a very close eye on making sure the prices still remain competitive, the value still remains there where the consumers are going towards, and providers aren't going to pull any...
Ernest, what would you recommend people should actually be doing? I mean, should they actually just keep checking, keep an eye on this? Should they go to the Uswitch website? What would be the sort of top tips that you'd provide at this time of day?
Most certainly. I think consumers could save so much money just by having a little look on websites like ourselves. People on Uswitch who currently switch mobile provider save up to £287. So whether you're in contract or out of contract, just come and have a look and see what else is available on the market. You'd be surprised at how much you could save.
Uswitch.com is obviously the place to go to. Ernest, as I knew it would be, it's been a privilege sharing some thoughts with your good self. It's the game of saving money, which is probably why you are ideal to actually move to Uswitch after working in the grains industry, you see. So it's a win-win situation. We've got two final questions, though, for you. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you, Ernest Doku?
Definitely. Highly entertaining. Thanks.
In which case, hopefully, we'll connect with you again in the not-too-distant future, when hopefully we'll have more good news, or potential good news, for consumers when it comes to mobile phone contracts.
and on a programme which has featured Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar, Richard Fitzwilliams, of course, reviewing Apostasy and Ant-Man and the Wasp, the wonderful Neil Jackson and Lucy Jackson with the latest of their musical trusts with Delta High, Gloria Hunniford still doing magical consumer-based material, William Sitwell, and, of course, Rebecca Seal, and we've just heard Ernest Duke, who, how could it get any better? Andy Brown, of course, our games expert, discussing the games event in London. Well, obviously, the Midweek Drive Morning Edition is simply not complete without Ian Lennox. How are you, Ian?
I'm okay. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, I know one of the reasons that we were unable to reach you is you're busily working with respect to the last few hours of transfer deadline day. Mike Ashley has a hotline to the Lennox household to find out who should go, and that's one of the reasons why Peter...
I'm in the big market as we speak, looking for a centre-forward.
Ivan Tooney, or Ivan Tony, has actually just gone to Peterborough from Newcastle for an undisclosed six-figure fee. So Ivan's headed off from that point of view. Clearly, Mitrovic has gone to Fulham. We're well aware of that. And you've also done a little swapsies. You've effectively sort of sent Daryl Murphy back to a different league to coordinate that, whilst maintaining a whole range of things. So are you happy with that, or is it just a case of it's all right, lads? Never mind. We'll have a whip round to make sure that you will get your cash dispute or your bonus dispute sorted out. It's fun times.
Right. I think the bonus dispute has been sorted, actually. I don't know. I don't know what the ramifications are, but apart from that, they're all happy now. And as far as everything else is concerned, I've also always believed that nothing will change in Newcastle until Mike Ashley goes. And unless he goes, I believe Benitez will leave at the end of the season when his contract's up.
So you wouldn't consider actually doing a Stan Kroenke and selling out to American owners? I mean, Ellis Short has got a bit of time on his hands now, I believe.
Yes, he didn't have a very happy experience at Sunderland, did he?
Well, maybe he was just waiting for the right club. Okay, we have to ask the question, is it a good decision to go for Salomon Rondon as opposed to Dwight Gayle? Dwight Gayle, of course, now a baggie. Salomon Rondon about to become a magpie. Is that something which fills you with enthusiasm, much as when Malcolm McDonald joined from Luton Town, or is it a case of, oh, I don't know?
I think it's probably a good deal for both clubs, because Gayle has certainly proven at Championship level, and he will score goals for West Bromwich. There's absolutely no doubt about that at all. I think he hit the woodwork twice in his debut earlier in the week. We needed a big strong man up front, and I'm told I know Lascelles, our centre half, is a big strong guy himself, said this Rondon was the most intimidating centre forward he played against in the Premier League.
And I see Blackburn has actually signed Armstrong as well from Newcastle. So, yes, Tony Mowbray's Blackburn, to be precise. Ex-Baggy boss and indeed Borough boss has actually gone for another young Tynesider who many people had high hopes for and still maintain that. That's Adam Armstrong. He's actually gone on a four-year deal from Newcastle United. So, no chance, presumably, that the world record goalkeeping transfer fee of Kepa, which is now £71 million, will be sort of broken by Newcastle. Courtois, of course, heading to Madrid. So that's just some of the sort of early headlines from that point of view. Are you excited by the fact that in a few hours from now, to be precise, 72 hours, Newcastle United will be playing Tottenham Hotspur and the Premiership season will be starting in earnest? Or is it a case of you sense a certain amount of trepidation in the tune?
I don't know. They haven't certainly. They haven't brought in the quality of players they should have done. But I think they've probably got a better squad now than they had at the start of last season. There's very much to be made of the fact that Newcastle finished 10th last season, but it was such a tight pack. If the results had gone,
he could have been relegated.
Could have been about 15th, I think.
Exactly. I mean, look, Ian, let's face it, we can't all be Pep Guardiola quality in terms of the range for that. But it was nice to see a solid 2-0 win against Chelsea in the Community Shield, which, whether or not you're Jose Mourinho or not, is actually another piece of silverware. But there we are. It's by the by. Jose said it was, so I'll say it is. Arsenal is, of course, first up from our point of view. And Lincoln City continue in their own way, because I know, Ian, they are your official second team, even though you've never actually seen the Lincoln Imps perform. Would you like to find out who Lincoln City will be featuring, as they sort of continue to progress, they're going to be at home to Swindon on Saturday at 3 o'clock. So there we are. It's an interesting line there. After having thrashed Northampton Town 1-0 recently with a goal scored by Matt Green.
Do you know what sort of crowds they get there now at Lincoln?
I think they're growing slowly but surely. I mean, they're currently in 10th place in League Division 2, so solidly based in there. Currently, actually, with 3 points, they share that with the all top 10 clubs in Division 2 all have 3 points. So, effectively, you cannot actually sort of get anywhere beyond the 1 to 10. That's the whole thing. But then, Ian, are you a man who basically would say you shouldn't look or even consider the league tables until at least you're 10 games into the season? After one game, frankly, it's ridiculous.
Yes, really, it is, isn't it? It doesn't mean much, does it?
Well, I don't know. Managers have been sacked for less. I mean, look at Blackpool. But that's another line entirely. And I believe he resigned. So there we are. Okay, moving on. We have to give a little tribute. We haven't mentioned, of course, the sad news that Australian golfer Sandy Lyle actually passed away recently. So it's a sort of sporting legend goes from that perspective. But we continue ever onwards. This is a question which normally should actually go to Arthur McKenzie, but who knows, Ian? Have you been watching the European Championships?
No.
See, I figured that was the case. We should have got off Arthur. It was clearly his destiny. Maybe I dialed his number by mistake, but what the heck. And as we found out what state Frodo was in earlier with Gabriella in Gibraltar, he was out on a walk. What's the state of play with Ollie and Oboe?
They're both out. I think Ollie's had his breakfast. I'm not sure about Oboe. He might have just gone out.
Does he not ask for a hall pass? Does he not actually? He just literally just goes out.
Well, it's so warm up here. They're going in and out at different times now.
Well, you see, I mean, here in Lincoln, highs of 20 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade, a rather cloudy day with outbreaks of rain. When I was passing you by and I was thinking, should I just drop in on the off chance? I thought, no, I'd never go without your advice. When I was on my way to Morpeth and then back from Morpeth Monday, I'll be heading northwards again a week on Saturday, so that's an interesting one. But still, in terms of that, I was thinking to myself, it's raining there, and I thought it was a glorious day, but then it started raining. You know, I just thought it's like.
If you give me a ring, Alex, I can allow you 10 minutes on my hammock.
Whoa. I think that's it. We will coordinate that in the very near future. This year, 2018, there will be a time where it's time we actually sort of met up in person yet again, because actually we haven't worked together in person, face to face, for nigh on a decade, really, Ian. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well, I was at Durham, wasn't it, when last did that?
That must have been about 9 or 10 years ago, or was it a little bit sooner than that? I don't know. But there was something on that basis. There was Durham, and of course there was the time when you were in the Middlesbrough Literary Festival in the library doing various things there. I remember it well. But nostalgia, it isn't what it used to be. And as we've already given the roll of honour for the programme, Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Neil Jackson, Lucy Jackson, Gloria Hannaford, Andy Brown, and Ernst Doku, and William Sitwell, and Rebecca Seal, and yourself, Ian Lennox, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have, thank you.
There is a brand new, sparklingly wonderful radio production that's going to be emerging at 7 o'clock this evening, immediately after Chris Clarkson has produced another fantastic drive time slot. Would you like to know what that programme is going to be all about and what it's going to be featured and how you can listen to it? Also, when it's developed as a podcast as well, or listen online at sirenonline.co.uk.
Yeah.
It's a special programme produced by and for and all about the awesome new Lincoln Theatre Royal, which we will be producing later on this afternoon for live broadcast with some of their pantomime stars coming along as well. So is that not a perfect resolution to the sad demise of one of the Chuckle Brothers this year to actually ensure that life continues ever onwards?
Yes.
Exactly. So I take it you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic link. Will you be back with us again next week?
I hope so, yes.
And as this is a time where we will be saying farewell, would you like to... I'll give you the opportunity here, Ian, and this is an ultimate sacrifice because we as I say, didn't connect with you at the appropriate time because of dialing digits incorrectly. And we can now actually ask you to say those magical words, Hawaii the lads, OK? I know it's confusing if you're listening in Lincoln, which hopefully you should be. Hawaii the lads is a wonderful affectation for fans of Newcastle United, which Ian clearly is. So to conclude the programme today, after three, a one, two, three.
Hawaii the lads.
you're all I need. And when my heart stops beating, just sing to me. When I'm not sleeping, you're all I need.